Welcome to Porch Talk, the show about healthy aging at every age, covering topics from young children to teens to adulthood and beyond. And now, here's your host, Janine.
Hi, this is Janine here, welcoming you back to Porch Talk. Hope everyone's weekend has gone well. Today in the studio with me is Michelle Dragony, a fellow co-side mother of a teen, which is a whole nother subject matter that we could cover on another show. But she's also a self-publishing author. Michelle has written a book titled Live to Die, The Birthday, Death Day Planning Process. We are going to get an overview of what Live to Die is all about. Before we get started, though, I would like to first mention our sponsor this week for Porch Talk is Clark Consulting and Associates. They are a private geriatric care management firm that specializes in assisting families through the transitions associated with aging. For more information, you can go to their website at www.clarkcaremanager.com. Or give them a call at 650-879-9030. So, anyways, today we are sitting on the porch with Michelle Dragony.
Hi,
hey,
Michelle.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I seem to remember we did this once before in Pescadero.
Yes, we did.
It was very fun.
So, welcome back.
Thanks.
In our different studio.
Yeah.
Here in Half Moon Bay. So how about we start off by hearing how you came to write the book?
Well, yeah, everybody has a family, and my family had a sister-in-law who had Huntington's, and she was going to get really sick. And I was going to be responsible for my brother's son, and I urged him to get prepared. But there's something about death that is just so fearsome that he couldn't face it, and it took him a year to get some basic things done, like life insurance, you know, things that would protect my family if something happened to him. I decided that after my mom passed away a few years ago, that if I'd had a book that I could have handed to him that, you know, had like a to-do list, it would be pretty helpful. It would have, I would have avoided being on the front line as the older sister telling my brother what to do. And I could have a third party, you know, say, hey, this is what you need to do.
Yeah, it's a tough, discussion to have, especially when you're not prepared.
Right. And most people don't have this discussion on a regular basis. So the title, Live to Die, The Birthday, Death Day Planning Process, is trying to get people to do this on a regular basis, like on your birthday, but certainly annually. And as you make it a regular conversation in your family, you change the culture of death within your family, and everybody becomes less afraid and more inclined to do the things that they need to do to protect themselves. Because if you don't plan for your death, then at that point, when either you've lost your mind or you've actually lost your whole body and your mind and you're dead, you there's all kinds of legal and financial consequences, and you can save yourself from an enormous amount of trauma if you take care of those things before you're ill.
Yes, definitely. So before we get further into the details of the book and the planning process, we're going to take a break. I like to play some songs that my guests request, and Michelle's first request is a song by the Kings of Leon. The title is Revelry, and we will be back in a moment.
What a night for a dance, you know I'm a dancing machine. With the fire in my bones and the sweet taste of kerosene. I get lost in the light so high, I don't wanna come down. To face the loss of the good thing that I found. In the dark of the night, I can hear you calling my name. With the hardest of hearts, I still feel full of pain. So I drink and I smoke and I ask you if you're ever around. Even though it was me who drove us right in the ground. See, the time we shared, it was precious to me. All the while I was dreaming of
back, and with us today is Michelle Dragony, author of Live to Die, The Birthday Death Day Planning Process.
That's it.
So what are some of the tools a person will create in working within the process of your book, Live to Die?
Well, the first thing that I mentioned in a moment ago was about the annual planning. So part of the book is there is an annual planning sort of series of forms that you go through. You can sit down with your family and ask yourself a lot of questions about what's changed in your life. Like has there been a death in the family? Has there been a birth in the family? Have you moved, changed houses, divorce, remarriage, all those types of things. And then the types of questions that they're going to be asking you about is the comprehensive action of the whole book. You need to look at medical, financial, legal, and spiritual. And in looking at those things, you're looking at very concrete documents like durable power of attorney for health, your will, and your trust. Your trust will allow you to avoid probate, so will the will. There's also the idea of post-death financial assurance. Life insurance, but you don't have to have life insurance. You just need to have enough assets to cover whatever debt you might have upon your death if you have loved ones you still need to take care of. And then death pod and death wishes. That's a large concept about multi-generational reciprocation, the idea that the younger generation can help the older generation, the older generation helps the younger generation. The death pod is probably core to changing the culture in your family so that you can use these tools. Getting people to use these tools is the next step.
Okay, so Michelle, let's go a little bit more into how we can help families, how your book helps families through the conversation and be able to communicate around this subject matter that a lot of people do have a lot of fear around of dying with the what you call the death pod. Can you explain a little bit more?
Well, the first concepts in the book is the idea of a first responsibility. It's your responsibility to yourself. I mean, you have a great life, you know, you live a great life, and then at the very end, through, you know, poor planning or forgetfulness or whatever it is, you know, you end up in a hospital that's not really doing the best for you, or you're in a care facility, or there's all kinds of, you know, scenarios that are not the best. also, there's a second responsibility. You take care of yourself by using these tools. You get your will, you get your trust, and you get those things sorted out. But then it's really incumbent upon us as a society to work together to make sure that everybody else is taken care of as well. And, you know, you look around and, you know, has your brother taken care of his things? Is there anything that you can do to help? You know, are your parents taken care of? Do you have a cousin or a niece or a nephew? I mean, you just look around at your family and you make sure that everybody's got a plan. And you find when you start making these conversations with people about that, it might be very tangential at first. And it's usually going to be started by some catastrophe within your family where you go, oh, look at this. This has happened. So-and-so has just had a stroke. They don't have a durable power of attorney for health. Doggone it. What are we going to do? And then, you know, that's your opportunity to, you know, get the book or start the conversation about death planning because you don't want that to happen to anybody else. So you can get the book. You can highlight it. Put some post-it notes in there. It gets you a little bit out of the argument, if you will. And it gives that person just a little time to think about a very fearsome topic by themselves, privately, without the imposition of somebody else's eyes. Another tact to take is also to go out to dinner or go for a hike, go for a surf. You know, but something that's just kind of low key, but it sort of takes a couple of hours, maybe a long drive. I know my dad once had a very fundamental conversation with his older brother when he visited him in Australia, and it was a life-changing conversation, and it happened during a long drive. So finding opportunities for conversation, I speak to it in the book. I give lots more ideas about how that might work. It depends on you as a person and who you're speaking with as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. So all this is outlined in your book. Is that how? So
I go into a lot more details, and I actually give a whole bunch of different sort of scenarios, sort of environmental scenarios and sort of social scenarios. I talk about maybe not bringing it up at a wedding. but at the same time, usually weddings take a long time, and at some time during the evening, there's no reason why you can't say something. Hey, give me a call next week. I want to talk to you about something that's really important. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sort of judging again, you know, the scene and your audience is important. You do have to give some thought to this. It is a sensitive thing, and you must assume that the person is fearful. The defense may come in a variety of forms, but you're trying to do it to help the person. And it is if it's offered in that way, you know, gently and kindly, I think generally you'll be received well.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, you know, with my brother and myself, it absolutely bonded us together more strongly than anything else that we could have done in our lives. To be in cooperation to help his wife, and then for it to have gone well, and she ended up having a good death because my brother faced his fear and took care of all the things that he had to take care of, and that's why I'm urging other people to do the same thing.
So did you, I know that your mother also passed away, and
right.
Was that, did this help you through that process? Or
very much. I think there's always going to be junctures, moments in time. I've spoken to a lot of people about their experiences, and I hear there's always a moment where all of the communication and all the culture that you've built really comes to fore. And there was a durable power of attorney for health signed by my mom, and her criteria was that if she lost her mind, she did not want to be saved for any reason. My dad and I had different criteria. Everybody has different criteria, and they change over time. There was an opportunity for palliative care for my mom, and she kind of looked like she was going to be able to do it, but in fact, she really didn't have any memory, and that's a requirement. And it was a tense moment when my dad really wanted to push it with the doctor, and I said, but Dad, remember, Mom wouldn't have wanted to be saved because she had lost her mind. And it was very intense 2 minutes, you know, catharsis. But at the end of it, we came out stronger knowing that we had complete agreement. We knew that we were doing the right thing for my mom and his wife, who he was very deeply in love with. And you had all of the years that we took to talk about these things made the difference at that one point in time.
Yes.
And it made it a good death for her.
Yes, I've worked with many families who have not had the discussions, and for the adult child who's left to either have to decide what that person, their parent or loved one, would have to assume, I guess,
right,
what they
yeah.
would have wanted is very difficult.
Oh, and not knowing what the person who's passed away wants, it makes you guess, you second guess. You know, you come down to the memorial and things like that, where people get buried. If you can talk about those things or cremated, these are really important to people. And they don't realize how important they are because it's clouded by fear constantly. And just, it's not now. Don't worry about it. But again, this book I wrote to try to change the fundamental culture in the country. I mean, the government is not going to bail us out when we get old, especially as baby boomers. We're going to have to come up with a pretty good plan B. And I think plan A is actually family and plan B was the government. And we got to get back to plan A and make sure that we work as family units with friends as well. I am a person who's in a death pod with somebody who I'm not related to, a long-term family friend, and proud to be part of that. And death pods can come in many, many forms, and urge you to start talking about it with your family and your friends at work.
And in the book, you emphasize reviewing of it on
yearly basis.
Yearly basis.
I have a website, livetodie.net, and you can purchase the book through that website. It links to a Create Space environment. And it's $15. And then I will have up on the website, it's in the book, there's an annual planner in the book that you can photocopy and pass out, but I will have a PDF on the website pretty soon. That's the sort of thing that, again, if you don't want to give somebody the whole book, you can just give them a couple of copies of the annual planner, and kind of get them started. You know, as you look through the book, you can see there's like four or five major concepts. Annual planning, the comprehensive, you know, five tasks of the medical insurance, the death planning, and then you've got, you know, your death pod. So there's a lot of really large concepts here. You can choose one of them and introduce that to a friend or a family member and make that your starting point. Look for opportunities, though. As you see something in your family that worries you, try to garner support amongst others and say, gosh, should we do something to help Uncle Jim, you know, if Uncle Jim's having some problems.
Mm-hmm. So can a person take up your book and just pick out of it? Do you have to go through the whole process, or can you go through it and...
I'm an instructional designer, I designed the book so that you could do both. And I've seen people do both. And I've had people tell me that, you know, it's so dense, it's a little on the overwhelming side, that they, you know, they put it in the bathroom and they just take a stab at it, or they put it by the bedside, they take a quick look at it. And I do that myself with books, you know, that I find are complicated. And so that's a good way to do it. If you sit down and you read it chronologically, it also reads well on a linear thing. There's some storylines that, you know, have some continuity. But I did make the book so that you could read it in short chunks. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, feel free to just open it up and check it out.
And, again, want to emphasize that it is not something that you only do if you are dealing with aging parents or an aging relative. It is something that's very important for all of us to do, right. No matter right. what our age.
Right. Yes. My nephew was 17 when his mom passed. And I remember maybe 6 months later, you know, we were joking around in the kitchen while we were having a barbecue. And we were just talking about how everything was going, and I made some sort of comment like, Matt, you know, when you're, you know, older and I'm older, you're probably gonna have to look after me. And he had watched my entire family, you know, build adaptive things for the shower and ramps for the houses and things for his mom. And so we have made it a part of our culture. We live that culture. You know, somebody's in trouble, we help them. And Matt saw that. And when I said it to him, he just giggled and sort of said, yep, probably. And I think that that's the way you introduce this annual planning, this lifetime culture of preparing for what is really kind of the culmination of your life, your death. It's not at the end. It's like the big cherry on the top at the end of the sundae that you save for the very end if you do it right.
Yes, and powers of attorney are very important.
Oh, yes.
And something that does take a lot of consideration as far as who you're appointing.
Very much so. In fact, my brother was not named the executor of my parents' durable power of attorney health. At the time, he was too consumed with the emotions of his own wife and his life. And he was also, he just hadn't really gotten to the point where he could deal with it well. And I was more pragmatic. As of this point in time, my brother would be equally fit as an executor. But, you know, we all talked about it, and Paul admitted that he didn't know if he could make those kinds of decisions, and I said, I think I can. And in the end, in that one moment in time with my dad, I did have the courage to say something, and it did. It was hard for me to say that, you know, that we had to let Mom go. But it came out of the fact that we both knew it was in the durable power of attorney. So it's not even just about when you die. The other major thing that happens in the durable power of attorney for health is that if you have a stroke, you lose your mental faculty, very important to have this signed, because it will allow the person who is your executor to continue to write checks off your bank account. I don't know if you know this, but your bank account will be frozen. If you can't sign the checks, you'll have no access to it, so you can't pay your bills. It can lead to major financial problems. Mm-hmm. So more than just one reason to get the durable power of attorney for health.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you can get that offline. You just go offline, you know, go online, and there's lots of different copies, and they're all fundamentally the same thing, but some of the sites will talk about the document differently, and it'll allow you to think differently.
Oh, pretty... heavy subject, but interesting and definitely important. So, Michelle, here on Porch Talk, I like to have my guests provide us a quote or saying. And Michelle has brought one in, and it's from a young friend of hers named Rachel, who is 17.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the quote that you...
Well,
brought in.
Rachel, she is the daughter of a friend I grew up with in England, and she was having some issues with her parents, so they asked her if she wanted to see Auntie Michelle, so she came out here, and she'd had a tough year for various reasons. She came out smelling like a rose at the end of it when she got accepted into King's College, but it was a really rough year with glandular fever and all sorts of things, and she came up with this quote that she made up herself, she said. Don't cry over the past. It's gone. Don't stress about the future. It hasn't arrived. Live in the present and make it beautiful. And she really lived that way. And she's back in England now, and I miss her. But that's a good quote to live by.
And does she have her...
That's a good question. Her dad's in Norway. Her mother's in England. So that is, yes, another conquest for me to make.
Or at least her
international
power of attorney.
Right.
Well, thank you, Michelle, for joining us today on Porch Talk.
Well, thanks, Janine, for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you coming in. And I'm sure we'll have Michelle back again, because there's much more we could go into in regards to this subject. We will have Michelle's second music request in a moment, but today's... I want to mention again, today's sponsor of Porch Talk was Clark Consulting and Associates. Clark Consulting specializes in assisting families and older adults through the transitions associated with aging. For more information, visit their website at clarkcaremanager.com or call at 650-879-9030. Until next week, this is Janine wishing you good health and happiness. And part of maintaining good health and happiness is to be open to the lessons that life has to teach us, which is what Michelle's second music request is about, sung by Melody Gardot, called Some Lessons.
Miracle that I'm do not think I can survive on bread and wine alone. To think that I could have fallen a centimeter to the left would not be here to see the sunset. Have myself a time. Well, why do the hands of time so easily that's the price we have to pay. Oh, well, some lessons we learn the hard way. They don't come right off and right easy. And that's why they say some lessons learned, we learn the hard way. Remember the sound of the pavement, world turned upside down, city streets unlined and empty, not a soul around. Oh, life goes away in a flash, right before your eyes. I think, well, how will I reckon? Had some real good times. What do the hands of time so that's the price we have to pay. Oh, well, some lessons we learn the hard way. They don't come right off and right easy. And that's why they say some lessons learned, we learn the hard. Father,
you've been listening to Porch Talk with Janine. Tune in next Sunday at 4 p.m. for more discussions on topics relating to healthy aging at any age.